And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is our guest Glenn Poole. And Glenn's going to be the dad for the day. He's going to be asking the questions. So, Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill.
And our special guest today is Peter West, who's going to be speaking to us about a range of issues relating to raising young men in our community. At this point, I'll hand you over to Glenn Poole.
Hi, and welcome, Peter. Lovely to have you on the programme.
Thanks, mate.
So, look, I understand that you're a lecturer at the UTS, but it's your period on sabbatical at ANU when you looked at fatherhood that I'm really interested in, because I've been looking through your book, Fathers, Sons and Lovers.
Yep.
And what struck me when I first looked at it was you're a historian looking at fatherhood. So I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit about what it's like for, and why should historians be looking at issues like fatherhood?
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only guy that has got friends who are female, and they're all talking about women. So it's women's this and women's that and women's history. And they were doing a women's history of Penrith. So I thought, well, what's left? Let's do a men's history of Penrith. I've been to some of the men's gatherings, like there's a men's festival in January every year. And I thought, well, let's find out what it meant to be a man. So between the feminists, and also they've done a lot of work on gay history, so seemed to me there was a big hole in the middle, and that was, what are men doing, and what does it mean to be a man?
Yes.
So that was a kind of tricky question, because no one ever asks the question. And so I went around asking guys, and
yeah.
I was in Penrith. I understand there's a town in England called Penrith.
There is.
This is the story of any town which has a river and a railway line.
Right.
And so what did it mean to be a father? Well, Dad used to be the head of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, son, this is how you should behave. This is the way you should... You should buy a block of land. That was my dad's. Dad used to be the head of the family, and Dad used to do three main roles: perform, protect, and provide.
Yes.
Perform, because they had to go to work and do that thing and, you know, please the boss and so on. Protect, because protecting people was a very, very big part, and fathers were expected to protect, you know, their loved ones. And, of course, to provide, and
yes,
that was a huge issue for men of this era. I mean, Dad was in the Air Force during the war and so on.
Yes.
And providing you for your family was a massive undertaking and terribly, terribly important. You know, what was it like for men of this era? And boys were held in place by all these things. Fathers, first of all. Second, churches. Third, other men who would, you know, say, well, I'm going to tell your dad about you. I saw you pinching those blackberries, you know.
Yes.
And then, of course, by school. So fathers were part of this network of masculinity. And I would guess the same would be true of England as it was of Australia. So I talked to guys, and this I call him Mike, because it's not fair to interview people and then put their real names. So I call him Mike. And Mike was one of my students, and his father had died when I came to know him. And he said, when he died, he grew a halo. We've forgotten all the bad things he'd done. But
yeah,
when he was alive, I thought, you old bastard, you don't care about me. I'd tell him something I'd done, something I was proud of. He'd just walk off to make a cup of tea. But then at his funerals, his friends told me, he was always talking about you. Didn't you know that? Didn't you know how much he thought of you? But of course, you know, the man never said so to the son. And the boy says, I realise now he cared a lot about me. I cared about him. He
yes,
was my role model, but I never hugged him till the day he died. So that's the old style of masculinity. So you've asked, where have we come from?
Yes.
So then the question is, how has it changed? What are things like today? Well, today, women know best. Women are the experts. Women know, you know, there are articles about relationships. Well, who knows about relationships? Women do, of course. And there are articles about sex in all, you know, the Guardian and the Herald and so on. Who knows about sex? Well, women do, of course. And then there are articles about fatherhood. Who knows about fatherhood? Well, women do, of course. And there are articles about male circumcision. Well, who knows about that? Naturally, women. Who else? So, and we look at the ABC and SBS, and this is progressive opinion, and what we find is that feminism rules. There are articles all the time about women and feminism and feminism and women and so on, and guys feel like, hello, is there any place for us? So it's quite a challenge,
yes,
I think, particularly for straight guys today to know who they are and where they come from without being constantly ridiculed, picked on, analysed, trivialised. And Jim McNamara's book, which I've reviewed, I think, in a couple of things, one in The Conversation, in an article that's being picked up also in ResearchGate, 75% of the media talk about men as aggressors, villains, perverts and philanderers. So, I mean, this guy just analyses media all day. That's what he does.
Right.
And these are the images of men that are being thrown at us. And so where does it leave fathers? Well, we find fathers are missing in action in families, that you know, we worry that they're not doing enough. A guy in Tasmania, Rex Stessiger, said to a boy, "What does your father read? What does he write?" And the boy said, "Checks."
Right. That's really
interesting. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And when is that, Peter? So, I mean, that very much refers to the sort of the role of dad as being provider, which you're talking about from the 1930s. But what era are you talking about now when the boy's saying what my dad writes is checks?
Oh, present. You know, that's the
right.
present.
Right, yeah. So in some respects, we've seen very little change in the role.
Yes. Yeah, well, some things remain the same. And we hear so much about women, and it's difficult not to sound whingy or moaning or complaining about this. But it'd be nice if there were some safe places where men could talk about what they want to say. And I think probably this is the role of men's sheds. I swim down at Bronte most days, and there's a kind of a pile of guys, I call it the University of Bronte, where the guys talk to each other. But they don't want to be judged, they don't want to be analysed, they don't want to be pitied or trivialised. And Anthony Brown has done some of the research on older men, and he talks very much about this, about safe places for men to tell their story, you know, without being summarised. I hate someone summarising my life.
Got it.
Or trivialising or... So imagine, and I've talked to the listeners, though. Now, imagine someone talking about you and one of your relationships. Could be with, you know, your partner or, you know, call your wife, if you like, or your son or your daughter. And for someone to summarise that, really, it's annoying and hurtful because they're all complex relationships. And if anyone's going to bloody talk about my relationship, I want to do it.
Great. So we're going to give you more chance to do that, Peter, and talk about fathers generally in the second half of the show. But we're going to take a musical break. And
okay.
I know you've chosen a piece of music. And I want to ask a profound question. Is this a deep, deep and meaningful piece of music for you, all about fatherhood? Or is there some other reason why you've chosen it?
Yeah, it's just a piece of fun because I sing in a choir and they always say I'm the deep, deep, deep bass. And so I like music that with very high sopranos and even men singing very high. Of course, it's all very magical for me.
And that's a perfect introduction then to Aha and Take On Me.
Yeah.
That was A-ha singing Take On Me, and we're back with Dads on the Air, and we're speaking with Dr. Peter West, the well-known author and social commentator, head of the research group on men's and families at University of Western Sydney, and he's written regularly for the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age. So I'll hand you now back to our special dad for the day, Glenn Poole.
Hey, Peter. So before we went off to A-ha there, we were talking about the importance of giving men space to explore their stories. So I want to move more towards how we do that in this part of the conversation.
Yep.
But there's a couple of things I want to pick up from the first half of the show before I do. And the first one that really struck me was, I mean, I take for granted what you're saying about the absence of men's voices and men's personal experiences from our exploration of recent history.
Yep.
And yet, in a broader conversation, if you were to say that, I'm sure someone would very quickly say, "Pah, the whole of history is men's history."
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, could you just speak to that initially? How would you respond to someone who said, "Look, men's history, all of history is men's history"?
You're trying to play a game of soccer, and then suddenly all the rules are reversed, and then you know they move the net so that you can't score anymore. People want to say, "Oh, women are underprivileged. Women are suffering." So, if people are able to make generalisations about women, and some of them, I think, are pretty, ratty. To say women have no superannuation, well, you'd have to say, well, which women are we talking about? Because the women that I'm hearing most from seem to be the wives of the entrepreneurs and industrialists, and you know, some of these guys we hear are getting, you know, $58,000 a week. That was a week, mind you, not a year. And the wives of guys like this, they don't have too much worry about superannuation. So the generalisations are being made about women, and yet when it comes to men, or that somehow the same rules don't apply. And Jim McNamara makes this point, incidentally, that if we're saying men have got all the power, well, you know, I nearly trip over people in Bondi Junction who are homeless, and whatever their story is, they don't have a lot, they don't have superannuation. Why don't we hear more about these guys? How come we can say men have got all the power when we hear so much that Aboriginal men have got problems? How come that the Aboriginal men aren't counted in this men have got all the power? How come homeless men aren't counted in this fake generalisation men have got all the power?
Understood. So, yeah, and then one thing for me where this really shows up, Peter, is, and you touched upon it earlier, is the idea that all the voices talking about relationships and parenting and so on and so forth tend to be women. And as someone who's written about fatherhood myself for nearly 20 years now, it used to be the case that when I went to a national newspaper in the UK and said I want to write about fatherhood, that I'd be put through to the women's editor.
Yes.
And that is something which has just started to change a little bit in the last couple of years. So these new spaces, there was men's sections in the newspapers, but they were sport and they were business and they were things that were external to us that men had an opinion about, as opposed to our personal experiences.
Yes.
And so I think new spaces do slowly seem to be opening up where men's personal experiences are being shared. Your book from nearly 20 years ago is a good example. The men sheds you referred to is another example. And there are new places in the media where men are starting to talk about their experience of fatherhood and masculinity and men. Why do you think that's it? Are you seeing that, A? And B, why do you think that's important? And C, if you can remember all these three questions, what do we then discover when we allow men the space to share about their personal experiences?
Well, yes, I do think it's changing. And I do think there are some positive signs. I think we've persisted, and I think persistence is the way. I mean, I read an article about why has it taken so long to get something done about boys' education, and every time we tried to raise the subject, they just said, oh, this is just a backlash against girls. And I'd so many interviews I'd do, and we were asking persistently, why are so many boys being suspended from schools? Why the expulsion rate's full of boys? If we talk to deputies, they're saying the boys aren't happy in this school. And if you ask the school, what are you doing for boys? They say, well, what's the problem? We've got plenty of sport. But we're moving somehow by some miracle through persistence, as I said, with people like yourself, dare I say, and maybe Steve Bidoff, whose work's been important in a very ground-swelling, popular way. People, you know, it gets to your guts. Steve talks to the middle of your guts, not to your head. And we're getting through to the young men. So when I talked to some of the young men about being a dad, I found an enthusiasm. I found a readiness to grab this opportunity. Dare I say it, we've succeeded in talking in a way that's getting through to young guys. So young guys are now being told, you're going to be a dad. This is really important. Your role is powerful. We want you there at the birth. Now, that's a big change. Now, when I went in to see the birth of my first kids, I was kind of pushed out and excluded, and I just absolutely bullied my way in to see the birth of my last. And this old harridan said, "Would you please leave?" But I'd seen the birth of my daughter, and I was happy about that. That's one small but significant change. So the guys are now saying, "Oh, well, I'm going to be a dad. You know, what should I be doing?" And we found some research that said when it came to things like breastfeeding, the role of the father's really important.
Right.
Or in the case of women that can't breastfeed, talking to the woman about what she's doing and helping her, being sympathetic, making her cups of tea, making her feel relaxed, helping her in those occasions when people are commenting on the breastfeeding in public, whatever. But the role of the father has been emphasised, and the young dads are liking it. They're happy about it. And watch them in the streets. They're playing with their kids. They're tickling them. They're playing sport with them. Have you seen that too?
Oh, very much so. I mean, you know, I saw it myself 18 years ago when my daughter was born, and I'm seeing it more and more just in the streets of where I live and running fathers groups in my city in England. So we've really seen that change. And but then there's also a kind of resistance to that a little bit. And I'd be interested to get your perspective on that, which is when some fathers' rights campaigners then sort of say, well, hang on a minute, they're trying to emasculate us. They're trying to make men more like women in order to make us acceptable parents. And some people see that sort of shift as a, not that they don't want to be involved fathers, but they want to be involved fathers in their own way, in their own right, as an expression of their own masculinity, not in a kind of an approved way, which sort of fits into a pre-existing female perspective of what's the right way or wrong way to parent a child. So there is some resistance and fear in that. Have you come across that?
This research has been very well established that
yes.
Fathers act in different ways than mothers.
Right.
That a father with a kid, whatever age, will play with it. Give a dad a baby and he'll start tickling its toes. Doesn't seem to be innate in us men. Just to be there, just sitting there with the baby doesn't seem right.
Right.
We want to play. So, you know, I play with my I've got five grandkids to date, and we have this game. Who's the biggest toad? You are. No, it's you. No, it's you. And we have this endless argument about who's the biggest toad
yes.
in the whole world. But playing, tickling, poking, you're running, jumping, hiding, of course, then the main part is to hide and hide, and then usually, you know, Finn can't stand it, and he says, "I'm in the cupboard," you know.
Yes.
And being found, and then shouts and noise, and that's very, you know, dare I say it, in many ways, I'm a typical man, noisy, playing with kids,
yes.
loud, and some people might see this as, you know, not the normal way to parent. Well, fathers have to find their own way to be parents. You know, there's, God knows, enough stuff about paedophiles and horrible men and aggressors, as Jim McNamara says. And we have to find our own way of being gentle with kids and playful. And play, by the way, for an educationalist is terribly, terribly important because it gives the kid very strong messages. I'm okay, I'm loved, I'm cared for, I'm happy. Dad wants to be with me, and we haven't even talked about reading, but dads typically, by the way, when it comes to reading, will do things like, read all the syllables reversed, you know, Rindicella and the Prance and Hints and all, you know, we do all
yes.
silly things. So Finn said the other day, "Read it silly again, Pa."
Right.
Yes.
There's something that I see there's an interesting sort of parallel in the way that when women first entered the workforce, they tended to do it in more masculine ways. So you
yeah.
think of, like, you know, Thatcher rising to the top
yeah.
of power in society,
yeah.
but being seen as the best man in her cabinet.
Yeah.
And as more and more women have entered the workforce, they've said, actually, we'd like to be more feminine and more female and more womanly in the workforce and
yeah.
change some of the rules of the workforce to fit with how we see the world.
Yeah.
And I think that an equal and opposite sort of journey is happening in fatherhood, in that fathers are entering the realm that was considered to be sort of more feminine, or more mum's job to start off with. And in some ways, it's only the very sensitive men that are able to do that. But bit by bit, as more dads are involved from a very early age, they're kind of asserting their right to be parents in a masculine way, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and we have to find our own journey, like Mike that I talked about earlier. His dad never hugged him.
Right.
Now, that's something that's changed. I see guys in the street hugging each other every day. When my son was sick, his friend said, "Oh, we love you, mate." Now, people are saying those things. There's a freedom among guys and a determination to do it their way and do it better than what they got from their dad. And I think that's really, really terrific to see.
Yeah, and so just as we move towards the end of the conversation, Pete, big question, but if you could find a small answer to this, which is, what then does the next generation of fathers look like? The boys who are brought up by this generation of fathers, what does the future hold for them?
Well, it's always seems to be a scary world. You know, we've seen scary things happening and people being blown up and so on. But, God, if I look back over history, you know, people were saying the end of the world was coming in about, 1650. We've had, revolutionary times, that almost any period of history has been crap. The generation before us lived through Second World War with, concentration camps and God knows what. There's always things to worry about. And yet, while there are human beings alive, there's hope. And as I said, the young guys are going to make a good deal of this fatherhood, and quite likely they are going to do it better than the fathering that they got from themselves. And it's just so great to see the young guys taking this on. And I've got, as I said, I sing in a choir, and some of the young guys are watching their wifey, as they call them. Wifey's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and this is going to be the baby, and I'm going to be a dad. And it's very important to encourage these guys, to give them support, to say, yeah, it's a hard journey, but God, it's worthwhile. And to see, my nephew come home from work and his kids run to him, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." I mean, it's such a precious part of his day.
That's fantastic. Peter, we're going to have to bring it to an end, but hopefully you and I are still around in 20 years' time to have this conversation again and check in with how the latest generation have done. Could you let us know what your final song is to take us out of the program?
Yeah, I think it's Good Vibration, something upbeat and fun and positive.
Fabulous. It's been great talking to you.
Yep. Cheers.
I love the colorful clothes you wear, and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. Softly smile, I know she must be kind.
That was Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners, so you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again with our special guest, Dr. Peter West, or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Peter West, thank you very much for being on the program.
Cheers.
And a special thanks to Glenn Poole, who's taken the microphone this week. So we'll be back next week with another show. Until then, it's goodbye from Dads on the Air.